is a visible layer and a hidden layer, both of which are binary units. Okay, so both of which take values 0 or 1. These are energy-based models. So the way that a probability distribution is encoded, a joint distribution, in this case, V over all the possible values of V and H, is through an energy. So this is why these are called energy-based models. So very, very familiar to us in physics. I've just written the energy in two different ways. So the way I wrote last time, so here's sum over weights in this term, and the weights connect visible and hidden. But nothing, there's no weights within a visible layer or within a hidden layer. And there's biases B and C on each of the visible and hidden layers respectively. And I've just written a sum from I to, from I going from 1 to n for visibles and 1 to n for hiddens, which makes Wij, I guess, a matrix, n by n. So I've just written this as a vector transpose times the visible units. So vector, 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 vector. This is a vector matrix vector. And then last time we started working on the gradient of the KL divergence, which gives us a quantity that we need to solve for, which is the partial derivative of the log likelihood with respect to, you know, whatever parameter, lambda, we're interested in for the stochastic gradient descent, which is one of the weights or biases. And we got this expression, which has two parts, minus an expectation value over, if you will, the conditionals, or weighted by the conditional probabilities of the energy derivative with respect to that parameter. And another is like an expectation value over the full model distribution. And then we looked at a specific weight, Wij, okay? So then, partial log likelihood. I think we got through this last time. Looks like sum over H, PH, conditional V. Now I've taken the derivative of that energy function. And for lack of a better way of writing it, I wrote the second term like this, which shows the fact that it's still complex or still has a intractable trace in it. And we finished off with something like the conditional probability of, this should be, I guess, I of I, condition on all of V, Vj. Which again shows that if we have an expression for this conditional, then the first term is easy. But even if we do have an expression for that conditional, this second term still has a complete trace over all possible values of the visible units, right? And last time I told you that this was a sigmoid function. Which I'll derive today. So in practice, how these two terms of the derivative of the log likelihood are calculated are done via sort of expectation values, like I said. So formally, this is done by averaging over the training set. S, which contained a set of visible vectors. These are all your pictures of cats that you fed into the machine. It's up to some size L, maybe. But just like previously when you looked at feed-forward networks, that gradient is too difficult to calculate in its entirety. And so in practice, this is averaged over just a mini batch, okay? Size, say B, much less than L. Maybe it's 5 or 10. You pull up 5 or 10 elements of that set S, calculate the gradient, you know, hope that the average gradient is basically equal to the entire gradient or the complete gradient over that set. So for example, which you're calculating something like V in, mini batch, partial L, partial WIJ. Expectation of VIHJ. Drawn from, you know, the conditional probability, which you know, right? So sometimes you say that you clamp this V visible to the element that you've selected from the data set. Okay, so if it's 0, this term's 0. If it's 1, then, you know, you sample the H term with that conditional probability. That's basically all you do. It's very simple. Then you have to subtract off VIHJ. Where that expectation value is calculated for the whole entire stationary model distribution here. Okay. So I'll just say, sometimes you say V is clamped to the data. But this term here is the expectation value. Of the model or the Boltzmann machine itself. So it's as hard as if you have a classical Monte Carlo, you know, implementation of the 2D Ising model and you want to calculate the magnetization or something of two sites. It's as hard as that. You know, you have to basically sample the distribution or produce data from that distribution. So there's different strategies. We're going to talk about one strategy after I'm going to derive that sigmoid function now. Because it tells you something about, it gives you some insight about how this is done. And then I'm going to talk about how the strategy for this thing here. Okay. And one strategy that kind of gets by this full expectation value is called contrastive divergence. So CD. So when I get to contrastive divergence, keep in mind it's for this term. Other strategies are being explored all the time. to calculate this term. In you know, I think one of the most interesting examples is hardware samplers. So Fujitsu is building a FPGA sampler that's supposed to give you you know, visible and hiddens, if you will, in a graph of your choosing, sampled according to a distribution that would occur in one of these machines. This is also D-Wave's strategy. So D-Wave has a sampling service now. And the idea behind this sampling service essentially is to provide samples that make the calculation of this thing fast. So instead of generating samples numerically somehow, the idea is that this part of the expectation value could be sampled quickly from hardware. Seems crazy, right? That's how important these learning problems are to people. If you want to train up a generative model, again, you know how to do this piece. It's fast. This piece is slow, and you know, people are willing to build devices that give you samples to make this thing faster. Contrastive divergence, a software solution that was developed by Hinton and others. So it's an approximate method. And again, remember, we already have lots of approximations in how we calculate the gradient, right? This is designed to calculate the gradient for gradient descent. The mini batch, you know, stochastic gradient descent is already sort of an approximation. It adds some stochasticity. So does the contrastive divergence. So come to come to Tishby's talk on Wednesday, and he'll talk more about how when you train with stochastic gradient descent, there's two phases of learning, like a fitting and compression phase. And his claim is that the success of deep neural networks has to do with something to do with the stochasticity. So just for completeness, let me write the update rules, or let me write the gradient of the log likelihood for all the weights and biases. So that'll give you gradient of the log likelihood. I'll just write it in this notation. So that's for lambda equals weights. That's the one I just calculated. If it's a bias, if your parameter is a bias on the visible units, B, and if it's on the hidden units, it's just H, HB. And I've called that one C. And of course, the update rule is the same. That's the important part of the KL divergence, right? Now I have the gradient of the KL divergence. For any of these parameters, if I want to update it, it's the current value minus the learning rate, right? Times the KL divergence. Questions on that? Let's do the calculation of that sigmoid function. Okay, so I've written everything in terms of, you know, given a visible vector from this training set, I take all the values of the visibles in that vector from 1 to m, right? And I use them to update the hiddens, for example. And I need that conditional probability to know what values the hiddens take. So let's derive that sigmoid function.
So we need to calculate the conditional
like this, okay? So first we need two things. We need
the joint distribution, which we know, and by the product rule,
if we write the conditional distribution like this, then in order to get the conditional, we need the joint divided by the marginalized distribution. This is basically just Bayes' theorem, the product rule. So let's start with that marginalized distribution in the numerator. P of V. Okay, I'm gonna drop all the gonna drop the vector signs. Okay, what do I need? Sum over H, E. The energy functional has a minus in front. It's E to the minus E. So each term has a positive. Did I write that the same way? CT, yep. Okay, so that's just the joint distribution. There's a partition function. You can have lambdas on all these things because they depend on these parameters, if you will. And I've summed over all possible values of H. This term here doesn't depend on any of the hidden units. So I can pull that out. Mm-hmm. Partition function out front. This is like a trace. Keep that in mind. So a trace is a product of a whole bunch of H1s equals 0 or 1. I won't write that. Well. That's going to get painful. I'll say 0, 1. H2. And then I can factor my exponential so that I can write it transpose vector of the biases. All the visibles, weights, and I'm writing this for an individual hidden unit I. Okay, so I can just do that because I've pulled out this piece that doesn't depend on any of the hiddens. So I'm just doing the trace really slow. Every one of these exponentials, I can associate with the sum that comes from the trace. That'll give me a nice expression. So here's for H1. So I'll write like this. I'm gonna write like a sum now. Because this is 1J, BJ. Okay, so that's the I equals 1 here, associated with that sum. And then there's N of these. Right, so sum over H2. E to this. And all the way up to HN. HN. I'm running it like this because the trace is easy. There's two values for each element of this product. 0. So it's e to the 0, which gives me 1. And then H equals 1, which is then multiplied just by this argument, right?
So I'll write it like this, G equals. Let me write that first term. That second term like this. Here's the trace, 1 plus E, H is 1. That's H equals 0, this is H equals 1, so then it's just CI. This is all in brackets here, here, here.
All right. So I wrote it like this because you can see that it's like I can almost exponentiate again, but only half of this expression is in an exponential. So what people do is they just throw everything up in an exponential. Sum over I, what have I got? I, I'll just say here, subscript I. Just to be sloppy. And they call everything in these square brackets. And don't get mad at me, I'm just a messenger. The free energy. That has nothing to do with the free energy. F, because it's a function of the visibles. So you've successfully traced out the hiddens, if you will. So if you read literature on the RBM and they talk about free energies, that's what they mean. Okay. So what an RBM is doing is basically fitting that free energy to whatever the Hamiltonian is that underlies this data set for us. So I have a Hamiltonian and I put it in a black box and I sample according to a Boltzmann distribution and I get V's out. Somehow this F, the thing inside that exponential, is like what you're fitting to the original Hamiltonian in some sense. Okay, so that's the expression for P of V, which is the marginal distribution. Again, that's in some sense the thing that, you know, you're trying to minimize, it makes sense, right? You're trying to minimize the distance between P and what we're calling Q, which is the physical distribution that we've sampled from. So let's use that Bayes product rule to calculate what am I calculating? The conditional probabilities, right? So that I can get that sigmoid function. Okay, so next. So I know what that is, and I know what this is, the joint distribution. can just write as transpose vector, 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 vector matrix, vector. I kind of have an ugly mess. This is an ugly expression. I have a partition function that I don't know. I want something that's a conditional probability of H1, H2, H3, each one of those either being 0 or 1, conditioned on the visible vectors. I'm going to pull a whole bunch of things out here. Like two different partition functions. I have a partition function there. I'll just pull this out. You know, it doesn't even matter what everything is. Let me go up to, I don't know, maybe this step here. Just to show you that okay, so this piece, that's my marginalized distribution, P of V. Then I have E to the B V transpose here. It's C T H plus B T transpose W H. Sure, I could write it like that. I have a piece that's like this here and this here. One in the numerator, one in the denominator. Those are going to cancel. And then what I'm left with is this partition function. But this thing here, okay, I can just call it a different normalization or a different partition function. Call it Z prime or Z twiddle or something. So just in terms of notation, L Z twiddle, and then I have what's left over, E to the C. That's biases transposed V T W H. And this exponential can be written as a product. 1 to N over the hiddens. E, C, T, sorry, plus V transpose W element I, H, I, write it like that. The point is that each one of those members of that product is the is like the factored conditional probability that I've already used here, right? When I drew this diagram as being no connections between visible, no connections between hiddens, I said this lets you factor your conditional probabilities. So I did factor the conditional probabilities. Nobody complained. It produced this expression here. This is the point here, is that I can factor every element in that exponential. And so now this is my conditional probability, but I have to worry about how it's normalized. I just threw a Z in there, right? So let's just, instead of worrying about this expression, we'll just solve for that normalization. So this is consistent with what I said before, P product from I equals 1 to N, PHIV. It's this thing here. How do I normalize it? It's easy. Because There's only two possible values for the hidden units, right? One or zero. I wrote HI equals one up there, but
P HI equals one, visible. There's another one, P HI equals zero, visible.
Adding those together has to be one. This gives us a normalization. So we call that normalization factor, I don't know, A or something like that. Right, so PH1 equals one is just this piece. And then when, sorry, HI equals one, when HI is equal to zero, it's just unity. Right, so that normalization looks like this, C, T, plus V, T, W, HI equals the one, plus HI equals to zero, gives me one, which means A is equal to okay, and that gives me my expression for this, which I'm going to erase now. But it's just the regular sigmoid function that you saw before. So P plus BT or sigmoid with that argument. So the sigmoid is 1 over 1 plus E to the minus Z, right? Okay, so that's, again, the factoring of the machine into visible and hiddens, which are only connected between each other, is really what's going on in the weight term here. And so that's what allows you to do this factorization and to calculate these sigmoids exactly. And you can do a similar derivation for the probability of any visible unit being one, you know, given us a set of hidden units.
For P, VI equals one, conditioned on the hidden layer.
So this allows what's called block Gibbs sampling. If you have a machine that is visible and hidden units, Gibbs sampling just means sampling according to conditional probabilities. So if I had a big, you know, sea of Ising spins and I wanted to flip a single spin, I could say, you know, what is the conditional probability of that spin being down subject to the state of all the other spins? We don't typically use that in Ising-like models or XY models or physical models that we study. We use metropolis sampling, But you could use Gibbs sampling.
Block Gibbs sampling is just sampling between visibles and hidden conditionally. One block, which, so sampling one block, say B or H, conditioned on the other.
So you go V naught, that whole entire vector, it might come, for example, from data.
Then the next step would be using the conditional probabilities here, and you can do it in parallel in principle for every single one of the hidden units. Give yourself H naught. You can do it again back to get V1, H1.
So it's like back and forth, block by block.
Oops. V2, H2, and so on.
So that's your Markov chain for Gibbs sampling. So it's used in two cases. It's used in training and in testing. Where is it used in training? It's basically used to calculate these terms here. So let me talk about that first, and then we'll talk about sampling afterwards. So remember, this is the easy distribution to calculate, or the easy expectation value. This is the hard one. They call this the positive phase and the negative phase. Maybe I got that backwards. Let's just call them easy and hard. Okay, so training. So, again, if you have some magical way of calculating that hard term through some hardware sampling or some, data set that you've sampled previously, and you can just select elements from that data set from a hard disk or something, fine. But in practice, one of the most successful methods of calculating that second term, that difficult term, is contrastive divergence. And it's a very rough approximation. Say whatever's in here, the model distribution, VH. In the gradient, in the stochastic. So in principle, you need to sum, over all possible values of visible and hidden units that are a part of that stationary distribution, right? So if you have a machine, you have to equilibrate it, you have to run it for a long time, then you have to sample it, and you have to make sure that your samples, in principle, aren't correlated and blah, blah, blah. It's just basically difficult. So sampling VH. So something somewhere out in this chain. You start with an initial condition. Maybe it comes from data, maybe it's random. You run this long enough, you're up to VK, HK. And in principle, you can use that as one sample, for this. And then you could do it again and get the second sample. Or you could go farther out in this chain and get another sample. And start calculating the expectation value. And that expectation value might take, thousands of samples or something like that. What contrastive divergence says is basically forget about all that. In contrastive divergence, you just run that Bloch Gibbs sampling for k steps, given a input data, input vector from the data, and but k is very small, typically like 1 or 5 or 10 or something like that. What that means is that hard term, this piece here that I'm erasing, isn't fully, if you will, equilibriated. But in practice, that doesn't seem to matter. And all you're doing is calculating a gradient. And as Tishby will tell you Wednesday, that gradient seems to be able to tolerate quite a bit of noise or uncertainty. And so that's the kind of trick behind contrastive divergence. So I'll say only for k order unity steps. And actually, k equals 1 sometimes works. Should be the first thing you try. So just to write out the algorithm, so V naught is initialized with the training example. Something selected from your mini batch. Okay. You calculate, the machine's just empty or random. You pull in a vector from the training data, there's a cat picture. You use your conditional probability to calculate all the values of the hidden units. And you can do it all in parallel, bang, with one step. It's very fast. So hiddens are obtained. That's H naught up there in that Bloch Gibbs Markov chain. You know the conditionals, P, H, condition on V naught. And set there, repeat. Or k steps. And then the CDK, so contrastive divergence with k steps is what that means. For the, remember, calculating the gradient. Is something like log, basically what we wrote before. So let me see, sum over all h. This is how I want to do it. V naught, derivative of e. I'll say plus. So the expectation value now, p. H condition on VK, say. Oops, K. Partial. Oh, and in those E's have to be the expressions for V naught and VK here. So I'll just write a subscript. You can derive this. So here's an update rule for the weights, Wij. There's a mini batch size, I called it B. Right now I've averaged over all elements of the mini batch. Mini batch. And it's V naught, H naught. I just gotta transpose that vector minus BK, HK. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay. Let's do it like that. V naught H naught transpose minus BK HK transpose. So that's extremely simple. If a mini batch might be, like I say, 10, 20 elements, something like that. This is the data, this comes from the data set. You know, this is straightforwardly calculated with Gibbs sampling. You run the chain a bit, you subtract off these values, and that's the update rule for the weights, and the biases is even simpler. You also use block Gibbs sampling during the generative or the reconstruction phase. So what you're going to do in your tutorials is train a Boltzmann machine like this. And then once the Boltzmann machine is trained, you're going to calculate observables on the Boltzmann machine. And there's one interesting thing about the sampling of the machine, which I'll just go through in the last 10 minutes, and that's the way that the train machine is essentially sampled with the analogy to the Metropolis update. Did you do detail balance? Right. So let's talk about that. How do you modify the expressions for ergodicity and detail balance and blah, blah, blah in the case of a train machine? Okay, training's done. We now have fixed weights and biases. And we want to sample, you know, that visible and hidden units according to that joint distribution. We're going to calculate estimators on the visible layer. So we call this a model. We call it P lambda, visible and hidden, the joint distribution. That's our best case scenario for learning the underlying distribution of the data. So it's a model of the data, or a model of the distribution underlying the data, such that, remember, P lambda V. And this underlies data in the set S. We can sample the machine through block Gibbs sampling in the same way as we did here, right? We can initialize the machine randomly, so V naught can be completely random now, and we could equilibrate the machine up for some K steps, you know? And it's just in the same way as if you did a Metropolis algorithm for the 2D Ising model, you might start all the Ising configurations randomly. Then you do a bunch of Metropolis steps, and that's the warm-up equilibration period. And once you've equilibrated, that sample should be, you know, representative of the underlying Boltzmann distribution at that temperature. Okay, so we're gonna do the same thing here. And as I mentioned before, we're actually interested in V.
so that we can calculate the expectation value of an operator over the visible units. Like I said, the first day in class. So,
when you looked at Monte Carlo simulations and derived transition probabilities with Lauren,
I don't know what notation you use, but I'll write the transition probability as a T.
And it's a transition probability of going from state mu to nu.
This is a transition probability.
G is called the selection probability. And A is the update, sort of the acceptance. So Metropolis sampling, you might have N spins. And if you selected one of those spins at random, the selection probability would be 1 over n. Then the acceptance ratio is the thing you derive for the Metropolis update. So you either accept or reject that that trial or whatever you want to call it. So this looks a little different for Bloch-Gibbs sampling. And why? So if you look at detail balance, which you derive from this, so it's a ratio of these two transition probabilities for mu to nu and back, nu to mu. This is proportional to the ratio of P mu over P. Sorry, P nu over P mu, where those are each given by the state of the machine. So those are the, you know, the stationary state. Of the RBM.
So we know the expression for those, and we know that we're sampling according to Bloch-Gibbs, which has a conditional probability in it. So we can use that to derive basically the acceptance ratios. And that's what you need to know for the analogy to the Metropolis update here. So in that case, we had mu to nu, might be a single spin flip. And it was P mu, no, nu over mu times, what are G, the selection probabilities? Like that. So let's consider the RBM in one case where we're updating, say, the visibles. So what we're doing is we're calculating the acceptance ratio. Remember, we have a joint distribution, so we have VH, and we're updating that to V prime H. So that's my mu state, and my nu state is just V primes, and I haven't touched the hiddens. So let me find a way to write this. So this is the minimum here. So I need the minimum, an analogy to the stationary distributions times, you know, H. Conditionals. Okay, so it would look like that.
So now my selection probability is a conditional probability. Luckily, since we know how these ratios look from the Bayes, I forgot all the vectors, but that's fine. So here's my prime on the bottom. So this is something like these are joints now. I'm writing these as joint distributions. And that's so that's also pH, so that cancels. So this is just so this ratio of joint probability distributions balances this one here in your detail balance expression. So the acceptance probability is just unity.
So A, pH given.
So once you use the conditional probabilities to select a new spin state, you always accept that spin state. And it works both ways. Derive it for, fixed. A visible unit sampling the next hidden unit, which is, you have to alternate in the Bloch Gibbs sampling. Okay, so again, it's very simple. All you have to do is you fix, say, the visible vector, and then in parallel, you can update all of the hiddens with that conditional probability. And, you calculate that probability of each one being 0 or 1, and you just give it that state, 0 or 1. You don't have to worry about any sort of rejection step. So it's a little bit different in kind of philosophy than the regular metropolis, but it comes from the same algorithm, or it comes from the same expression for the detail balance. So what else? So this is just like regular Monte Carlo, or the rest of it is.
MCMC.
What else do you have to know? You have to warm up the machine.
Warm up equilibration time.
And then you can collect statistics, And again, what you'll be doing is calculating the expectation. I think I called it Q, some observable Q, over the visible units based on those visible samples. So I derived the expression for this last time. And I'll just say that this thing is, it'll be like 1 over, let's see, the number of samples M that you draw from the visible units. Right, so that's sampled, sum over all samples, Q visible. So I didn't exactly derive this, but the expression is analogous to what you would derive for sort of regular Monte Carlo samples. So that's it. That's all I think you have to know. From this you can take a Boltzmann machine. Again, you take it and take a data set S. I erased it. You can train the machine with contrastive divergence. Once it's trained, you can sample the machine. And what you're going to do is explore how the basically main convergence parameter of the machine, which is the number of hidden units, affects the resulting, you know, say energy or magnetization or specific heat or susceptibility or whatever of that visible layer. Okay. So that's one of the nice things about Boltzmann machines is they model a distribution, but you can learn how to model a distribution with a minimum number of possible parameters. And you do that by starting the machine with a very small number of hidden units. There was N, I think was the number. Maybe 1, 2, 3, something like that. And then you can increase that number of hidden units until you get convergence of whatever physical estimator it is you're looking at, specific heat energy, blah, blah, blah. That's a big advantage over having to calculate something like a Kullback-Leibler divergence or relative entropy to see if your machine is basically converged in this number of hidden units. So it's one nice thing about using restricted Boltzmann machines for these types of physical problems. So I think you're going to look at the Ising model, is that right, at different temperatures? And the tutorial's tomorrow. Any questions on this? So I guess Giacomo is helping out with lectures starting tomorrow. Does he have two? Today? So Giacomo's giving a lecture today. We have a seminar at 2 p.m., which is Ever van Nieuwenberg. He'll talk about recurrent neural networks and how that can be used to, those can be used to process time series data. So he's up from Caltech for the next couple of days. I'll give sort of an overview of research topics, I think, on Wednesday, things that you've seen, maybe things that you haven't seen. And then Wednesday afternoon is Tishby's colloquium, which talks about, again, deep learning and stochastic gradient descent and that, all that stuff. Okay, any other questions? Microphone's going off. 3, 2.